You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, welcome to Built for the Stage podcast. This is Joe Roscoe, founder of Built for the Stage, Broadway's number one fitness platform. If you want to try a free trial, go to the website builtforthestage.com or click the link in the description of this episode, and you can work for 7 days with your own Broadway fitness coach on an online app. So check it out. No catch, no gimmicks. BuiltForTheStage.com. If you like Built for the Stage podcast, please rate, subscribe, and leave a comment. It'd be greatly appreciated. All right, please enjoy this conversation.
When and kind of like how did you come about deciding, I want to be a performer. You know, I want to do theater or film.
Well, when I was younger, I was just fascinated by TV film and just wanted to be on TV. I didn't really know anything about theater because I didn't grow up around it. And eventually, when I got to middle school, a teacher of mine noticed, because we had a TV film production class, noticed that I was like really invested in it and I wanted to learn more. And he was the one that actually got me started in the TV side of the business. And then it kept growing because I was like, I just want to act. I want to do this and that. And eventually he got me into theater, but I was doing more TV outside of school. And I just kept falling into it. And I found a manager and just was in that area. And I just kind of kept going with it. And my mom was very supportive of me doing it. And then it kind of just continued to blossom to the point where me and my friends would be writing skits or writing things and recording them around the house in our apartment and just being like, okay, well, you're going to be the police officer, you're going to do this, all right, and you're going to be the cameraman, and we need this angle. I'm just so invested that it just kind of took on a life of its own. And so, yeah, I always knew I wanted to be an actor, but at the same time, I wanted to be a doctor. So I was going to school and, like, loving science, loving anatomy. I became a certified nursing assistant. And I was just like, oh, this is great too. And I thought I was going to be one of those people with dual careers. And so right. I went to college and I was like, oh, wow. You can't be doing both of these things. They're both pretty sizable at the same
time.
Yeah,
two of the most, two of the most careers that would cause you to have to really, truly commit. There is no side hustle, one being a doctor.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So I took the nursing assistant side of it, and I worked in maternal newborn unit for a whole summer and did rotations throughout a hospital near my house. And I loved it. And I really think I got into the internship because I was like, oh, I want to be a singing nurse, you know, or something. And they were just like, okay, we'll take a try on her and see how she does. But yeah, I got to college, and all of a sudden I realized they only had a pre-med program. And I was like, oh, they didn't even have a theater program. And I was like, ah. And I was like, okay, well, they have a music program. I was like, I guess I can be a music bio double major.
Yeah.
And just act on the side, and, like, things just kept progressing to the point where finally they got a theater major. I was doing well in sciences, but I was like, I've already gone through all this stuff and had practical, you know, work. I've done this, so I know what bio is, I know what anatomy is, I've worked on people. So to have to do all these things again, I was just like, oh no, I don't know. And eventually I just took the theater major.
This was at Lafayette College?
Yeah.
In Louisiana?
No, in Eastern Pennsylvania.
Ah, Eastern Pennsylvania. Okay, so is it near Philly or kind of close?
It is. It's an hour. I think Easton is like an hour and 15 from New York, and I think it's almost equidistant to Philly.
Got it.
By train.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe we can segue, because I saw on your resume that you also have an MFA in musical theater, which is extremely rare nowadays among performers. And I was curious as to, for me and the listeners, what made you get or pursue an MFA? And tell us, you know, the perks and the advantages that you feel that you gain by going the extra mile in your education.
Well, I decided to get my MFA after I returned from a year abroad at Mount View Academy of Theatre Arts in London, because I had noticed that there was so much training and so many things that I wasn't aware of within our industry, our business, that I just needed more of to feel that I was going to be secure and ready to enter the professional world. And so when I came back to school, I was not underwhelmed, but I was more like, I just need more. I need someone to be that critical. I need to really understand what my weaknesses and my strengths are. And I wanted to continue to grow as an artist and really understand my craft, because I was like, there are people that are, they're only doing musical theater. They're only studying acting, singing, and dancing 24/7 for 4 years. And I'm not one of those people. So I want to compete and keep up. So I found the Boston Conservatory MFA program. And actually, I found that on a whim, because it came up on one of the ads on my Facebook, which I thought was strange. So I applied.
Wow.
To them. I'd never been to Boston. I have an aunt and uncle that live in Massachusetts that I had actually never met. And so I went up for the audition and decided to do that, and got in, got a scholarship. And a professor of mine from Lafayette was like, well, you know, you get your MFA, if you ever decide to teach, you can teach on a collegiate level. And I was like, wow, well, that's good, you know, just in case. I felt after going to Boston Conservatory, I had such a better understanding. I didn't know there were so many versions of musical theater, and I didn't know the history of musical theater. I didn't know a lot of performers' names outside of the people I just idolized. And because I came from a teen film background and music background in terms of jazz, it was just two separate worlds.
Yeah.
So I could get that information.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Yeah, I've always been interested in maybe pursuing that. There is a teacher inside of me. So that's cool that you have that ability that, you know, maybe someday when you and the future mister are settling down, you guys could just get you a professor job somewhere teaching musical theater and have a white picket fence and all that stuff.
You know, maybe.
For now, you're just traveling the country, the complete opposite.
Yes. I hope, you know, either one day we could travel the country together on a tour. I hear sometimes they can do that with spouses. I don't know what the loophole is, but I'm going to work on it. Or just go home.
Okay. All right, so getting into the Bronx, A Bronx Tale, you made your Broadway debut in it. Take us back to getting that call or email or text where they let you know that, you know, your agency or whomever, they let you know that, hey, you booked A Bronx Tale. Take us back to that.
Oh, that was a long one, because that was, when I say long one, I mean a long process, only because we had this audition, and this was my second time going in for it. It was like, the first time I got in for it was January, I think 2017, maybe, and then all of a sudden didn't get it. Months went by. I was in Florida on another contract, flew back up, went back in through the process, and a week went by and I heard nothing. And I was panicked ever so slightly, because I was like, oh my gosh, not again. I got so far this time. And I was talking to my agent, my manager. I was like, you guys just want to check, maybe, you know, just give him a call. And I guess Tara McCaskey had said, well, she's on hold, da 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 da. And I don't want to say nail biting, but I'll never forget the day where I was walking Grove Street in Jersey City, and I called my now fiance, because he was in Massachusetts, and I was like, all right, the next time I call you, I booked. If I don't call you, I didn't book. But I just have this feeling, the next time I call you, I'm booked. So I'm going to need you to pick up your phone. And my agent called me after that phone call and was just like, Brandy, you did it. You booked Broadway. You're going to Bronx Tale. And I was really just like, oh my God. And just like the engagement video.
Show. Right. I love that.
But outside in public. And I was just like, oh my. And I was like, oh my God, control yourself. You look crazy. And so then I called my fiance and he doesn't pick up. And I was like, oh God. Like, you had one job. You've been one job. And I'm calling and calling and calling. And he's still not answering. He's like, he finally called me back. He's like, I'm so sorry. I was at the grocery store. You booked? And I was like, are you coming home? Because I am on my film now, and I have great news. And of course, yeah, I booked. I'm going to be on Broadway. I have no idea what that means, but I'm going to be on Broadway. There it is. And we both freaked out. My family freaked out. Crazy. Just crazy.
Amazing. So you book the show. When you're in the show, you're in that theater, and you're about to do your first performance, or you're in the midst of it. I like to call it like a fruition moment. Did you have a moment where you were like, the sacrifices or the extra miles that you went, or the low times when you wanted to quit but you kept going? Did you have a moment during the show when you were like, this was what it was for? Like, was there any special moment in that first performance?
Oh, yeah, it was, and funny enough, it was Vows. And I'll never forget standing in these, like, the rafters, but in these towers, and I'm at the top of one, looking down, and I see, like, everyone in the audience, but I see my cast, and the company is just clapping, looking up at me, and I had the biggest smile on my face. And I can't forget, like, looking at everyone, and, like, people like Richard H. Blake, and everyone taking their bow to me, and I'm sitting here just like, oh my God, guys, it's okay. But I'm still just smiling and just so thankful, and I felt everything was worth it. I mean, everything's always worth it, but to know that, like, oh, I did it. That's what all this training was for. That's what all those long nights were for. All those, like, early non-union mornings, those flights that you paid for, that, you know what I mean, the auditions that didn't pan out. This is that moment that you say, thank you. Thank you to everybody. Thank you to all your teachers, all your people, everyone that's put hands on you to really get you to this moment and guided you. So, yeah, it was everything.
Very cool. Very cool. Any, like, moments, so you mentioned, like, the long mornings or the early mornings in the non-equity line, or the flights you had to take to try to get to an audition and you didn't get it, but you paid all that money. Were there any moments when you wanted to stop or you wanted to quit, but you just wanted, you know, you just persevered somehow? And how did you do that? How did you keep going?
There were never moments where I wanted to quit, but there were definitely moments where I felt very low, and I 100% second-guessed my talent, my worth within this community, what I had to give to this community, or if I could ever be good enough to be among all these great people and great artists. And I'll never forget, there was one where I was sitting on a train, and I was in a show, and waiting to hear if I booked another show. But I'll never forget, we had this really long rehearsal, and the director was just, there were just notes on notes on notes on notes, and I was just trying to get my head around it and be better, and I was just like, man, like, how am I not this, you know, how am I not woke enough for this moment, or am I not educated enough? Like, I was like, my acting skills, are they not on par enough? Like, how am I not? My impulses, they're not right. And I just kept second guessing everything. And I'll never forget being on this train and just being like, I don't know. Like, am I not cut out for this because I'm not good enough? And I was talking to my fiance at one of the stops, and he was just like, are you really just, is this how you're really feeling? And I was like, I'm not feeling like I'm going to quit. I just feel like maybe I need more training. Maybe I need to, like, read a book. And I think those are always the things when I get to those moments that I'm very fortunate about my education and about my teachers and people that I've been inspired by, kind of, like, you know, give you a nice, like, plop on the head of, no, just reinvest in yourself. If you don't feel like this is it for you, or if you feel like you're low, pick up a book, study your craft, because that's where we get our energy from. Go see theater, go see a movie. Like, you have to reinvest within yourself in those times. And there's been a lot of times, because as actors, most of the time we don't get the job, and it's for a million different reasons, that you have to sit back and look at it and just be like, okay, that one wasn't for me, but I'm a firm believer that what's for you will not pass you. So if you just keep working on yourself, you just keep staying ready for the next opportunity. And yeah, that's what gets me through all those flights that I paid for that are no longer tax deductible. And
right,
just all those early cold mornings of sitting outside of one of those theaters that didn't open up until maybe 8, but you had to get there at 6 because that list, and everyone wants to, you know, everyone mm-hmm. wants that opportunity to be there bright and early. So
that's
yeah,
right.
That's what gets you through. You know?
Yeah, I ask because, you know, in fitness, it's a long time paralleled in the sense of there's the moments of doubting, wanting to quit, what do I do? So I think a great thing the listeners can take from is how you mentioned that you wanted to dive into books or studying or tapping into what your teachers poured into you or seeking more of that. And I think, yes, sometimes that is the case of, hey, you have to go back to the drawing board or you have to look into more detail as to how you can up your game, because sometimes you might feel like you're just shooting blind or you're shooting and you just can't hit the target for whatever reason. So in fitness, you know, that's the same, whether it's getting a coach, following a program.
Exactly.
You know, not just going in and, yeah, go ahead.
I think, and that's what people don't realize or don't know. And even walking out of grad school, I didn't know that there were people that I could use. There are resources out there. There are coaches and there are affordable resources out there. And I think that's the bigger thing to take away because we spend so much money into ourselves as actors. It's very expensive. So I completely understand that. But there are affordable
right.
options for people to help you. And I'm always referring my friends to coaches or teachers, whether it's for voice or acting, that can just look at you and tell you, you know what I mean? They give you another opinion to be like, hey, try this, go that way. And 9 times out of 10, it works because we can only do but so much, but we can't see ourselves. We can think that we know it, we're great, this works, until someone else says, well, then why did you choose that versus this? Or what if you flipped it on its head and did it this way? And that's, I think, how people prosper in this industry because it really is a team effort. No one makes it by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
I'm reading the book, Never Eat Alone. I'm reading right now.
Oh.
It's about this, it's what you're talking about. Never eat alone. And it's what you're talking about. It's like, you're not, anything you do, it's not just because of you. And if that's your approach, then wow, you're missing the mark. Yeah. I can't agree more. So in the show, the creative team of A Bronx Tale, it's an understatement to say that you had some pretty heavy hitters on that creative team. So, yeah. So for the listeners, there's Chaz Palminteri. He wrote it. It's actually a really cool story. We'll get into that in a second. You have songs by Alan Menken, the Academy Award winner over and over and over again. You got Glenn Slater. You got the direction by Jerry Sachs. And then at some point, some guy named Robert De Niro. not sure if anyone's heard of him. Can you tell us a little bit, about Jerry Sachs? I see a post on your Instagram where you guys are together and you say that working with him was like a dream. Can you just tell us a little bit about that, working with Jerry Sachs and, I don't know, moments that he might have blown your mind in the rehearsal process or, yeah, anything that might pop in your head?
Well, dream come true. Because Jerry, he did Little Shot, he did Sister Act. Funny thing that happened all the way to the front. Like, this man's list goes on and on and on and on, right? But being in a room with him, he's so humble. He's so kind. He's hilarious. And the way that he, at least, because I didn't really get to work with Jerry when I came in for the Broadway company because I was a replacement. So in setting up the new tour, I got to work with him a lot, and just watch him work. And I was like, this is a masterclass in acting, first off, because he really understands on comedy, too, and like setting things up, landing, but also just like really digging into sincere moments. And just, he knows, which I think also Steve Edlund, because they was the associate, works with him a lot. They really know how to talk to actors and how to get the best out of an actor. And that's what just blows my mind every time. So, yeah, the man's so funny. He's so funny. And I just, I don't even have like a specific story to say like, oh, when we were in rehearsal, Jerry did this. But it's just like every time I came to work, I got so excited because you just sit there and you're like, oh, this is just a great room to be in.
Yeah. So it's the story that I was, that I saw about how the show was first a one man show and then a movie. And now it has turned into this musical. It's very like Sylvester Stallone, Rocky-esque. So if you know the Sylvester Stallone story, he makes Rocky, he wants to go to the producers, he wants to write it, he wants to be in it. And they're like, no, we really like it. We're going to do it, but we're not going to do it with you. And he sells his dog at some point, like this awful story. And then it obviously paid off. Basically, he's on like Rocky 9 now, if you include the Creed movies that are out
right
now. So he, and then the same thing, yeah, with Chaz Palminteri. He's like, I wrote this one man show about my life, and he goes to the producers, and same deal. They're like, no, it's really good. We're gonna do it, but you're not gonna be a part of it. And it was $1 million, he said in the interview, that they offered him, which at that time was, you know, it's obviously at this time big money, but at that time was
real,
you know,
money.
it meant even more.
Yeah.
And he says he goes in the bathroom and splashes the water in his face, and he looks at this note from his dad that he wrote him as a kid, and he's like, no, I'm sticking to my guns, and here he is now. This is going somewhere. So this is for the listeners out there. Brandy obviously knows this, this whole story, but this is for you out there. So Chaz runs into Robert De Niro, and Robert De Niro on a handshake says, we're going to do your movie and you're going to be in it and I'm going to play your dad. And then boom, the rest was history. So in the musical and the story, a lot of it is about the choices that you make in your life and how it either helps or deters the progress of your life. So in your life or in your career, Brandy, what are some choices that you can like look back on? Maybe we've mentioned some already that you feel has really influenced the path of your career and where you have gotten to so far.
Oh, the choices. I would say for me, a lot of the choices have been, I guess, in terms of growing up, because I'm one of 10 children.
Whoa, okay, hey.
Yeah, I'm one of 10. Small detail, very small. But I'll never forget being younger and feeling like I didn't really belong because I didn't really fit into everything that my siblings liked. You know, just our way of life, a lot of things in our neighborhood. A lot of people weren't really involved in theater and acting, but they were involved in music. And I'll never forget feeling like an outsider because there was just like the way that my brain kind of worked and the way I felt like I wanted to be creative was different than the way they wanted to be creative. And so I guess early on, I just kept, even though like they thought I was here for it, I just kept like sticking to my guns about that and staying true to who I was or what I really wanted, or obviously being open to learning about other ways because my siblings loved making music and, well, it's going to be R&B or hip hop or all these things. And I was just like, okay, well, you know, what about like a Whitney classic or what about like an Otis Redding? And they were just like, Brandy, you're weird. Okay. I don't know why you keep going back to these other artists. And I was just like, okay, all right. So I think that was the big choice that I always had in growing up, and whether it was in elementary school to high school to college, it's always just firmly sticking to who I knew I was and to what I wanted out of life. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I want to be in this industry. I want to be a part of this industry. I want to be a performer, but I also want to be a creator. And so whether it was that first teacher saying, hey, Brandy, do you want to do this? Do you want me to show you how to do this? And I said, yes. And I think I've always been a person that's so open to learning and open to saying yes about projects and things and activities. And that's been kind of my driving force. It's like, well, let me try. Let me see it. Okay, let's do it. Why not? Mm. Until you get there and you're like, okay, maybe that's not, you know, maybe I'm not that, but I'm this, and this works too. And if we switch that, you got me. So, yeah, I think those have been the choices that have helped me in this industry. And then another choice was to do a theater workshop, which I thought was, I didn't know anything about until some people told me, like, oh, you do this thing, you have to load in the set, you have to do this, it's a lot of work. But my first rehearsal, I'm sitting there with Dev Janke and Peter Flynn, and these people are huge hits in our industry, and I get to work with some of the best, and I met Dan Kanekis and Pete the Cat, and I'm working on family theater and children's shows, but I'm working on it at such a level that I feel like I'm in Juilliard or Stella Adler, like, studying the craft, and they're, like, nitpicking every little choice I make and, like, bringing all these things out of me and creating shows, and those choices and those productions led me to being where I am today. So, awesome. You know what I mean? Not looking down at things, always saying yes to things, and always realizing, like, every chance you get in this industry to perform and to be a part of a piece, and especially original works or whatever, I was like, that's a beautiful opportunity, because a lot of people want to do what we do, and not everybody gets a chance. And that's unfortunate, but when you get that chance, do it and have a blast doing it.
Yeah, you mentioned some names that you got to work with. You also, in the show, worked with your choreographer of the show, Sergio Trujillo.
Oh, and my God, Memphis is my life.
The dancing in the show is electric. It's like, if you haven't seen it, or if you have seen it, for the listeners, it's like one of the shows where you're watching and you're in the audience and you're like, does anyone mind if I get up and just start dancing? Can I dance a lot? Do you guys mind that are sitting? I can't do that. I have to wait to dance like a fool in the lobby or out in the street. Like, when you watch the dance, because they're stylistically in the show too, you kind of have three different groups going on, and the music and dance is all different, and it's amazing, each in their own way. So tell me a little bit about, like, because when you came into the show, you said that you started as a swing. How challenging was that for you, facing those numerous tracks of, like, what you have, the steps, the track, everything about it? How was that for you?
It was good. As I said, for a swing, you never know you can do it until someone tells you this is what your job is. I didn't know what a swing was.
Say that again. That was great. Say that again.
You never know that you can do it until someone hires you to do it.
Right. Because, oh, wow. Okay. Sorry. Go ahead. That was great.
I didn't know what a swing was, but I knew someone was giving me a Broadway contract, and I wasn't going to say no. So
that's right.
Getting there, I'll never forget meeting Michelle Arvena, and she was the swing. And she was the associate dance captain, and she was the one that taught me the show, for the most part, along with Brittany Conagotti. But I'll never forget being like, okay, a 5, 6, 7, 8, wait, what? Like, we're doing, okay. And when you're a swing, you don't get the stage for a while. You're in a rehearsal room. They're telling you numbers, but they're just like, here are the movements. Let's do this. Let's do that. Okay, go. And mind you, the day before, I had a 4-hour music rehearsal and then just had to go straight into choreography after. So you just kind of have to absorb. And luckily, they taught me one track at a time. In our show, I was swinging both of the ensemble ladies, Denise and Frida, and Jane. So Jane was going to be the last thing I learned, because they already had coverage for that. So, yeah, the movement wasn't difficult. But it was like, it's stylized, you're sitting there, it's so different to do something by yourself than when you're put in with everyone else, and then you see, like, oh no, traffic jams, okay, just, you have to be so focused, and I found out I have the brain for that, so I really enjoyed swinging.
Got it.
It wasn't until, I guess, learning Jane, because she had a few more actual dance tricks and turns within the number, that I was like, oh, I'm I'm a mover.
That, yeah, that was kind of what I was referring to, because there's some razzle dazzle in that choreography, that's for sure.
Yes, but I am a stepper, but I am a mover. So I was like, okay. But luckily, even the associate choreographer was like, this is you. So when you take on Jane, you be you. I don't need you to kick your face. He was like, whatever you do, strong. Like, it doesn't need to be a line, but I was like, it needs to have power and strength and, like, confidence. And that's what everyone kept drilling in me. And I was like, oh, okay, that's great. But then we got to this new production. And Webster completely changed. And I never forget walking into rehearsal. And he was like, all right, let's do it. And my friends had done pre-pro, so I was just like, oh, gosh. And he comes to me, and he's like, all right, so what do you have, a single or a double? And I was like, what? A single? And he looks at me, and he's like, can you get a double by, like, Schenectady? And I was like, you know, I guess, yes, I could try. I just don't know. And they had me practicing my doubles over and over again. And actually, I'd done one. And I was like, I don't think it's great. But he was like, no, that's a double. Now you just need to spot. And I was like, oh, what is spotting? What are these things? You're saying things on a spot. But I can get around. I was like, I'm fit enough to get around twice. So there were so many, like, different aspects of the show that had changed. And Sergio being very, very kind and patient about that, but also saying, like, you're going to rise to the occasion. And in my mind, I was like, well, now you don't really have an option. Like, you just got to do it.
Yeah.
And the company, or at least a lot of the Webster kids, just being like, Brandy, you are a dancer. And I was like, nah, I'm a mover. Like, this, you guys aren't hearing me. You're not listening. And they're like, no, you're a dancer. You're twirling. You can do this. And I was like, I know I can do it. I'm fit enough to do almost anything, right? At least, like, because that's the thing. When you work out all the time, when you're at the, you know, you feel like you're at the tight, like, top of your fitness game.
Right.
Dancing's not difficult. You're not going to sweat the same. It's just, like, you think of it more as, like, circuit training, to be honest.
Yeah.
That's what I think
about
it.
It's not can you do it. It's just how you do it. Because you know that
yeah.
you can do it. It's a matter of, you know, figuring, having the two pieces connect together.
Exactly. So there was a lot of just connecting all the dots. But I love my cast, because they were just like, you got this. And anytime I felt insecure with something, because they were just like, all right, you're going to sotobas this way or turn that way, double this way, you know, up, down, single, move it to the other side. And I was just like, okay, all right, this is what we trained for. I got this. Just give me some time. Let me memorize it, get my patterns together. And then sooner than later, I'm sitting here doing doubles. And now I mess around backstage a lot and be like, oh, God, watch this triple into a fouette, into something else. And they just laugh. And I'm a dancer.
There you go. You made
I'm
some
dancer.
Gains there in that short amount of time. Wow.
You do. It's all mental.
like I mentioned before, for all the listeners, how I kind of stumbled across Brandy's Instagram profile, she's at The Brandy Porter. That's Brandy with an I, BRANDI, The Brandy Porter. And she is, yeah, she's looking like the definition of fitness for sure. So you're on tour right now. How, with the dancing and having to take the bus and have, you know, the struggles of tour life, how do you maintain your body? How do you eat clean when you usually probably don't have, like, a kitchen, things like that? What are the tricks of the trade that you kind of have taken on to continue your fitness journey, to make sure your body's in great condition and that you're eating and priming it sufficiently?
Get a skillet. That was my biggest takeaway. So you can cook. Yeah, I always go to the grocery store after either the first day we get here or the second day in the morning and go grab all my vegetables, fruits, and I'm a huge fan of the big bag of carrots because it's super cheap, but some carrots and hummus. And it's really just setting yourself up for success for the week so that you can take in some snacks to work and be replenished. But I'm also highly into the routine of every morning, wake up, steam, you know what I mean, go to the gym, eat breakfast. It just, I have to be regimented.
Yeah, so you said two great things there, and they're often said, but people still, for some reason, don't want to do them. One is being prepared. So I know that probably not everyone in your cast has the habit of going straight to the grocery store or getting the things they need. You know, maybe they're eating out or they're finding themselves in that jam where, oh, I'm starving and I have nothing. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing you said was the routine and regimen. I tell my clients to try to be a robot. The more we can just like press the button and just go through the day business as usual, the less distractions or other moving parts that can derail us from our goals.
Exactly.
Do you see that? Do you see that? You know, you don't have to be like, oh yeah, so and so, but do you see that amongst your cast where it's like, yeah, if I didn't do what I'm doing, I totally would be in that same situation where I'm just ill prepared and feeling like this tour is eating me alive.
Oh, I would definitely feel that way if I wasn't. But I've also noticed a lot of people within our company have noticed how regimented I am, or they're just like, oh, well, Brandy eats this. Oh, now I'm going to start going to the gym. So it's actually this great notion of you inspire other people because people watch your daily habits and they're just like, whether or not they feel great or upset about how they look or something or their energy throughout the day. And they're just like, oh, well, if this person does this, maybe I'm going to give that a try. So you have a lot of people who are on their fitness or are trying to make better choices in terms of eating, but they also know that, you know, I'm all about balance. I love a French fry. Okay. I love,
right.
You know what I mean? I eat what I want, but I also know that like my butt will be in the gym. There's no other option because I have to, that's how I start my day. That's how my brain really starts waking up. And that's what's going to get me through the rest of the day. But yeah, no, I love a chip. You know, don't get it twisted. I'm not crazy.
Yeah, it's moderation. it's moderation.
Everything's moderation. A lot of people realize that.
Yeah, they go off the deep end thinking that, you know, they do the binge fasting, binge juicing, binge whatever, and instead of just living a well-balanced life, because that's the name of the game.
It is, and people should realize it's a day at a time. Nothing is quick and fast.
Yeah, go ahead, girl, go with it.
You know, it's the truth. Nothing is quick and fast. There's no quick way. There's only one day at a time, one foot in front of the other, and just let the results be whatever they're going to be. You know, if you want a fit lifestyle, that's different than if you want just, I don't know, the washboard, the quick shred. And my goal is always to be fit for life. You know, I want to look this good. I want to be Angela Bassett.
Uh-huh.
All right. So,
what's your favorite style of working out? I know you do kickboxing, Zumba. Mm-hmm. What's your usual, you go in the gym, what's your go-to? Like, what do you like?
Sprinting and lifting weights. So
sprinting,
a lot of cardio. I'm a huge fan of the jump rope now.
This past
2 years, I've gotten really big into jump rope workouts. So I love what it used to be a few months ago. I stopped now because we do a lot of jumping in the show and I have to preserve my knees. But it used to be you sprint for 2 minutes at like 9 miles per hour on the treadmill. Then you hop off and jump rope. And then you go back and you go down to 8 miles and then you go back to the jump rope and then you come back to the treadmill and you sprint for another 2 minutes at 9 miles per hour or you hit up to 10. And then you come back and then you go lift. And that used to be one of my favorite little tricks of the trade.
Okay. All right. You do a little wave there. 9, 8, 10. Okay. All right, cool. I'm going to shoot you some workouts after this to say thank you. I just posted one on Instagram. With a running deadlift interval. So I'm excited to geek out with you and send you some stuff because I love all those things that you're just talking about right there.
Yay.
So one last thing. Two more things. Tell us first just how you got into fitness or like how long has this been going on? You know, where did it all start?
I've always been into fitness. My dad was huge into it, but I've always felt like I've been a fit person, but it didn't really 100% kick in until I went to Mount View, and they had us doing, we would come in at like 8 in the morning or not, or maybe it was like 7, and we had to do body conditioning for an hour as a part of the program, and I was just like, oh my God, I'm out of shape. I didn't know. But by the end of the year, I felt like I was a tank. Just diesel. Invincible. I could do anything. And then I came back to the United States and I was like, oh, now I have to push myself. And that's what's really hard. Like, finding your motivation to push yourself that far to that limit. And like, the teachers in London were just like, come on, let's go. Come in. And they were just all over you. And then you'd be planking and you couldn't drop, and you're in a puddle of your sweat. And I was like, I don't know how to do that for myself. So it took a while to really get there, but I was just, as I said, every day, baby steps. So I would just kind of get my butt into the gym. And I had a personal trainer at one point who was helping me, because I was like, I want to be lean and all these different things that, you know, you personally want out of your own body. And so I took that workout. Then my friend introduced me to BBG, which is this bikini body program run by Kayla, this fitness woman from Australia. And I was like, oh, well, this is hard. So I did that. But then the real kicker was my big brother passed. And it was a year before, I think I missed a boy's tail. And that became, I had to go to the gym. And I had to work out. And then running was like me kind of dealing with it and kind of clearing my mind and getting my head together. So that's when I really started sprinting past whatever I had ever sprinted in my life. And my brother was huge in the fitness. So it was kind of like, oh, this is my way of being close or feeling like we're still here. So yeah, fitness just became that. But then it also it always evolved. So it just turned into like, no, now this is a part of my everyday and this is my lifestyle. And I like pushing myself to the limit because it's fun. And then we get stronger, better, and we look great.
I want to wrap the episode, the interview, with a quote from your website, which is, I'm a fitness girl trying to be in Black Panther 2, # goals. That had me on the ground. I'm a fitness girl trying to be in Black Panther 2, # goals. I just watched Infinity Wars, which is the Black Panther characters are in. My two dogs, I just got a new dog. Her name is Pepper Potts after Iron Man's love interest, because my first dog's name is Thor. So I'm not even a huge Marvel. I am now, but like at first I just happened to see the Thor movie at the time I got my dog, and my dog, his name was Simba at the time, and I just for whatever reason I was like, I don't know if I can go with Simba. I don't know. So I saw Thor, and that's all that happened. But yeah, when I saw that quote, you should totally be in Black Panther. You should be that leading woman, just tearing things up with those. What do they have? Those long like spears. They're just like, cranking. That's you. That's you.
I'm trying. Marvel is my life. Okay, I love Marvel all of my life. Black Panther 2. If not Black Panther 2, I'm thinking the spinoff with the Warrior Women. That's one of them. I'm gonna be there. That's
all right. Let's put that out in the universe. You are doing that. All right. So for those of you listening, you can find Brandy, you can find her on her website, brandy-porter.com. Once again, that's Brandy with an I. You can follow her on the Insta at thebrandyporter. Once again, Brandy with an I. Anywhere else we can find you or anything you want to shout out to the listeners before we go?
No, just keep working, keep pushing, be nice.
There you go.
Yeah, well, kind of
world. The world needs a little bit more love, right?
It does, always.
Okay, Brandy, thanks so much for being on the podcast. I really appreciate it. I hope you all enjoyed out there.
Yeah.
Yes, have a great time in Denver. Good luck breathing on stage. And enjoy the mountains, okay?
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
You as well, Brandy. I'll see you. Bye.
And that'll do it with Brandi Porter. Hope you enjoyed. If you want to check out Brandi on Instagram, she's at the Brandi Porter, and her first name is spelled with an I at the end. Once again, if you like the podcast, rate, subscribe, comment, would mean a lot. Would love to work with you. Head to the website, builtforthestage.com, or go to Instagram at builtforthestage. Shoot me a message. It's me, Roscoe, signing off.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.